Moncrief on News Talk.
If you despair for the lack of action on climate change, it is possible perhaps to draw some comfort from the ozone layer crisis of the 1980s. This was one of those rare instances where international cooperation did manage to address an environmental problem. We're joined by the environmental journalist John Gibbons. Afternoon, John.
Afternoon, Sean.
For those who don't remember, tell us what a CFC is and, you know, why people were thought they were great when they first came out.
Yeah, these CFCs, or the chlorofluorocarbons, were first invented back in the 1930s. And they're the active ingredient in things like refrigerators and, of course, hairspray and so on. So they're a very inert gas considered at the time to be completely harmless. And they basically ended up in all manner of devices and gadgets. So air conditioning units, refrigerators, etc. So what happened then, Sean, is back in the 1970s, a couple of scientists did some calculations, and they estimated that as the CFCs wafted away into the atmosphere, particularly, for example, when fridges and things are disposed and dumped, the CFCs leak out of them, end up in the atmosphere. And the question was, what would happen to them? Because the CFCs at sea level are very stable, but when they hit the high atmosphere, they're subject to be bombarded by ultraviolet radiation, where there's little protection up there. And what happens in the upper atmosphere is that the CFCs are broken down. The molecules break down and chlorine is released as a molecule. Now, chlorine has the unfortunate habit that it eats ozone. So atmospheric ozone exists at high altitude in very small quantities. Yet, the existence of atmospheric ozone is the reason why the surface of the Earth is habitable, because ozone shields us from deadly solar ultraviolet rays. It filters them out. So basically, the CFCs were leaking into the upper atmosphere and eating the atmospheric ozone. So the so-called ozone hole, Sean, was officially discovered over Antarctica in 1985. And something really shocking happened after that. And that is that countries listened to the scientists, the politicians sat up and took notice. And in the 1980s, America at the time was led by a Republican government, which, of course, was Ronald Reagan and so on. And after initially denying the problem, the evidence is so overwhelming that ozone was going to be a massive problem. Also, the public got their head around the idea of the ozone hole. It sort of captured the public imagination. So fixing the ozone hole became a big thing. And 2 years later, and this is incredible speed, we had the so-called Montreal Protocol was signed into effect. And it was kind of pushed through by the Americans. I know it's hard to believe, but this is America actually leading on environmental regulation. And the Montreal Protocol was signed up to by 197 countries. And they very quickly phased out the use of these more dangerous CFCs. And the result, Sean, as you said in your introductory remarks, is probably the greatest success story in the modern environmental history. And what we have is a situation where there is the ozone layer is still damaged from the ozone that was destroyed in the 20th century, but it is healing itself slowly, and it's expected to be back to sort of 1980 levels probably by mid-century. So it is very definitely a very good news story from the point of view of what happens when we listen to our scientists, when our politicians are guided by expert evidence, and when we act decisively. Because I would say there were companies saying the whole thing was a hooey and it was all fake news, etc. But thankfully, those voices were drowned out. And it's just as well, Sean, because if we hadn't dealt with the ozone crisis in the 1980s, if you had a Trump figure in America in the 1980s, the Southern Hemisphere today would be largely uninhabitable. So that's a bullet that we dodged.
My word. Was it when people would speak of the hole in the ozone layer, was it an actual hole, or was it just an easy way of presenting it in the sense that the ozone layer was thinning?
Yes, I mean, you're absolutely right. The ozone hole, that was coined actually by a journalist, right? And it caught on. And the scientists sort of dodged around a little bit. You're absolutely right. It was a thinning. There wasn't an actual hole, but there was a dramatic thinning of the ozone coverage. And luckily, I suppose, for humanity, most of the thinning happened over an uninhabited continent, which is Antarctica, for all kinds of complicated meteorological reasons. But for example, skin cancer rates in Australia were sky high, and largely to do with the the spillover of the weakened ozone hole in Australia. And there's no question, Sean, that certainly Australia would long since have been uninhabitable had we not acted decisively in line with the scientific evidence. And it does behove us to consider what would happen today if we had similar warnings about a pending environmental crisis. How, you know, would we be able to act like that? And unfortunately, the evidence to date in relation to the climate emergency is absolutely not.
Yeah, well, I suppose the good thing is that the ozone crisis was one thing and there was one solution to it, whereas what we're dealing with today is multifactorial, and so everybody has a get out of jail free card. Who invented CFCs? I'm getting texts from people saying it was Thomas Midgley. It was Dr. James Lovelock.
No, it is actually that your first texture is correct. It was Thomas Midgley. He was a quirky inventor back in the early 20th century. He gave humanity two things, right? Two of the most dangerous substances ever created. Number one was CFCs, and number two, he invented leaded petrol. Mm. So he gave brain damage to tens of millions of people around the world. I mean, for example, violence rates after we eventually move to unleaded petrol. Mental illness rates of serious mental illness, IQ scores all over the world improved. So we were literally dumbed down by lead poisoning thanks to Thomas Midgley. He was, I think one scientific writer described him as the most consequential human of the 20th century. And you'd be delighted to hear, Sean, that he died in some ghastly collapse of one of his weird inventions. So it was a hoist with his own petard situation for Midgley.
I must apologise to some of the texts. James Lovelock discovered the presence of chlorofluorocarbons in the atmosphere. So we can thank him for that.
Absolutely. Sure. Yeah. Lovelock was an extraordinary inventor. He actually reached the age of 100 and he only died very recently. And he was responsible for many inventions. And he also gave us, Sean, a concept called the Gaia principle, the idea that the Earth is a self-regulating organic system, effectively that the Earth is alive. Now, you might say that sounds a little bit hippy-dippy, but Lovelock based this conclusion firmly in science. And it is something, it's a very interesting way to think about the Earth, that it is a self-regulating organic system where inorganic substances interact with life. And a good evidence of that, for example, is that all the oxygen in the world, where 21% of our atmosphere is oxygen, all that oxygen is produced by living things, principally, obviously, by vegetation, both on land and at sea. And we wouldn't have any oxygen were it not for the subtle interaction between living organisms and the inorganic planet. And that's another legacy from James Lovelock.
Yeah. Now, is CFC production at zero, or were there any kind of, you know, little clauses in there in the Montreal Agreement?
There certainly were. Part of the move was to think called HFCs, which was another variation of them. And they didn't contain chlorine, but they did contain some other nasty stuff. So that's been an ongoing battle. And there have also been problems with particular substances that are used as chemical reagents for producing various petrochemical products. And they were originally exempted from the Montreal Agreement because their quantities were so tiny back in the 1980s. However, we now find that what they call feedstock leakage rates are up to about 3.6%. And this is enough to extend the length of time it's going to take to heal the global ozone layer by an estimated 7 to 10 years. So ideally, we should be phasing these out as well. But as I say, these days, Sean, it's an awful lot more difficult to knock heads together, to get politicians to make difficult decisions and to take on interest groups. And to your earlier point, by the way, about the different scales of it, you're absolutely right, because there was a very small industry, a number of players like DuPont, different corporations who could be targeted, and they were given supports and encouragement to move away from CFCs. And it was one industry. The problem, of course, with global carbon dioxide production and methane is that it pretty much is embedded in everything that we do. Our entire civilization is driven by these emissions. So you could never apply the analog of saying, well, we solved ozone, so we should solve the climate crisis. It is orders of magnitude more complex. But at the same time, it shows a pathway when we do listen to the experts.
Yeah, and somebody's just texted in to say Margaret Thatcher was Prime Minister at the time. She was a qualified chemist, understood the problem. She had influence over Reagan and played a part in the effective banning of CFCs. Gosh. That's
right.
That's the way the world has turned. You look back with fondness on Reagan and Maggie Thatcher. Jesus.
That tells us something, Sean, doesn't it?
Doesn't it just? John, thanks a million as ever. That was the environmental journalist John Gibbons there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.